using the balls of your feet.
When mothers come to us, they bring everything they are with them.
Are they talking about me?
The new series of Call the Midwife.
Everything feels better after a cup of tea.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Well, our drama tonight on Radio 3, The Farewell Glacier, takes us to the heart of the Arctic landscape, past, present and future, with a cast including Peter Mullen and Adjoa Ando, and the voice of the Inuit human rights and climate campaigner Silhouette Cloutier. In 2012, the writer Nick Drake visited the Arctic archipelago of Svalbard on a 19th century ship. This visit resulted in his collection of poems written in the voices of many visitors to and inhabitants of the Arctic, both real and imagined, past, present and future, as climate change takes hold. In his introduction to the drama, Nick shares some of the inspiration and impact of that experience.
I sailed around the Svalbard archipelago in the Arctic Circle, aboard a 19th century boat with a group of artists and scientists. It was the end of the Arctic summer. It seemed as if we'd sailed into a vast dream. Light flew into our eyes constantly, reflected by ice and water and sky. Our shadows lengthened before us. Silence unfolded over and over. Time slowed. But we were not there just to take in the astonishing beauty, but to begin to understand how the climate emergency has affected this apparently pristine Eden of ice. When I came home to London, I felt like an alien. The sky was full of planes, the roads jammed, the supermarkets full of produce flown in from all around the world. It was one of those strange moments in life when the way things are is not normalized. The Farewell Glacier grew out of these two connected experiences. I wanted to write about the wonder, but I also wanted to tell a true history of the European exploration, exploitation, and imagination of the Arctic. But this is just one aspect of a far greater story. There are, of course, many Arctics, with a vast history of indigenous peoples and cultures, and their own stories to tell. My voyage in the Arctic changed me deeply. I hope the Farewell Glacier takes you too on a voyage of discovery, wonder, imagination, and, I hope, change.
And now, the shipping forecast at 0048 GMT on the 1st of January 2024. Arctic Basin, Baffin Bay, Barents Sea, Beaufort Sea, Chukchi Sea, East Siberian Sea, Greenland Sea, Kara Sea, Leptif Sea, Lincoln Sea, Pechora Sea, Wandel Sea, South Severe Gale 9 to Violent Storm 11 to Hurricane or more, veering, backing, visibility poor, becoming fog.
New ice. Frazzled ice. Pancake ice. Brash ice. Grey ice. White ice. Leaping ice. Fast ice. Field ice. Need ice, counted ice, multi-year ice.
General synopsis.
Going, going,
going, going.
Pip, pip,
pip.
Once upon a time...
What darkness is this?
A long, long time, and a long time ago...
Don't say that. It's a boring way to start.
What darkness is this?
Dark is taktunuk.
But it's true.
It is true is suliyuk.
This is about now.
And the future.
Si vonivut is the future.
And the past, if you don't mind.
Dreams is sinatunuk.
Why are we even here?
What is this place?
What darkness is this?
Shh. Hush. Listen. Come into the circle of this light. Welcome.
When we see somebody, we just usually say "ai," which is a short way of greeting, "ai," and "tungasuit," you're welcome. Tungasuit.
Thank you. Welcome. Please, tell us a little about yourself.
My name is Sila Watt-Cloutier. I am originally from Kudjuak, born and raised there. Traveled only by dog team the first 10 years of my life. Didn't know any English until I was 6 years of age when I started school. And that's my home base, is Kudjuak. And for the most of my life, for the past 27 years, 11 of those years were in elected positions with the Inuit Circumpolar Council that protects the interests and rights of Inuit internationally.
We are honored to have your presence. Here we all are, in the heart of winter, in the long, long night. So, let us tell our stories, and tell them now, tonight, before midnight. The clock is ticking, down to the darkest dark. But please, don't be afraid. Remember, we are in this together. Who wants to begin?
Well, I was first in the book, so me.
Introduce yourself, please.
Pythias the Greek.
No jokes about names, please, friends.
Explorer and geographer, 4th century BC, as you would say.
Please, go ahead. Speak. Tell.
I sailed with the sun into a dream. North beyond the furthest shores of Britannia. Beyond all knowledge into a great solitude. The shadow of our mast lengthened across the sea. In the diminished nights, new stars appeared, never before seen. The pole star rose higher and higher until we discovered the edge of the world. The philosopher says, time is an accident of motion, and surely that is true, for we came to a place where the sun did not set, and the ocean still, and the waters congealed to a garden of ice. And in the half-light of midnight, I beheld Artikos, the Great Bear, the Pole Star, and 7 stars, turning above my head, as if we had discovered the still point of everything. I staked my life and sailed into a dream. But when at last I returned home and told this story, no one believed me.
We also were not believed.
There is disbelief.
Denial.
Even now. But we swear we saw these things with our own eyes.
What things did you see with your own eyes? You, sir?
I am, in your English language, Brendan of Clomfort.
Brendan, the navigator.
Brendan, the voyager.
Brendan, the anchorite.
Brendan the Bold.
St. Brendan of the 12 Apostles of Ireland.
Brendan buried in Clonfert Cathedral.
577 AD.
Hush now. Too much information, friends. This is what matters. We sailed in chorus, long and narrow, made from willow, tanned with oxide, softened with butter, and caulked with tallow. We sail for 7 years on the waves of creation in search of the Isles of the Blessed, the Garden of Eden, the Land of Promise, Paradise. Monks, pilgrims, latecomers, unbelievers and holy fools, with wine and cold food and heather for bedding, we slept on the sweet scent of home in the nowhere of the sea. Our anchor was a stone dropped in the bays of silence, where no man aged, for the sun held still in the sky. We found an isle of birds singing psalms and praising the Lord. Came upon the Isle of Laughter. And one day, there appeared on the horizon. A crystal castle, floating on the ocean. We sailed towards it and found, carved by the waves and the winds, a passage through it to the sky. And in that long light, I stared into the eye of God.
But if no one believes you, you're silenced.
Sila, would you please tell us about your world?
It is now early June, the beginning of springtime in the Arctic, that brief period between winter and summer when life is miraculously renewed. The snow, apart from patches here and there, will soon vanish from the land. Our delicate plants, such as the purple saxifrage, fireweed, and poppies, suddenly freed from their covering of snow, are quickly greening again. The snow buntings, chupa noak, always the first to arrive, are being followed by flocks of other migratory birds, among them geese, ducks, loons, and terns. The snow-white winter plumage of the ptarmigan, ahikit, our Arctic grouse, is taking on its summer camouflage. Like generations of Inuit, I bonded with the ice and snow. The world was blue and white and rocky, and defined by the things that had an immediate bearing on us, the people who helped and cared for us, the dogs that gave us their strength, the water and land that nurtured us. The Arctic may seem cold and dark to those who don't know it well, but for us a day of hunting and fishing brought the most succulent, nutritious food. Then there would be intense joy as we gathered together as family and friends, sharing and partaking of the same animal in a communal meal. To live in a boundless landscape and a close-knit culture in which everything matters and everything is connected is kind of magic.
Thank you, Sila.
Thank you, Sila.
Dreams of strange lands are all very well, but they must be financed and made profitable. Otherwise, why go?
State your name and business, sir.
Michael Locke, merchant, traveller, international financier. I paid for Mr. Martin Frobisher and two ships to discover the passage to Cathay, a dream of a trade route over the top of the world. Imagine the money to be made. And on a fine morning of June 1576, the Queen waved them farewell and Godspeed from a balcony of Greenwich Palace. Yet, when he returned, eventually, how did he repay me? With a stone as black as mystery, claiming it held gold ore. The assayers in the tower were unimpressed, but an alchemist, an Italian, disagreed. He showed me gold dust. I know. I was in debt, so I believed, and from this flattery I worked up a terrific story and raised new investment to send a second expedition, bigger and better. To recoup my lost investment, which was all I had, 27th of May, 1577. This time, the Queen permitted Frobisher to kiss her hand, and she contributed £1,000. I waved them off. Sailors, gunners, carpenters, refiners, merchants, and convict miners. They brought back 200 tons of stone and the tusk of a sea unicorn, which was presented to Her Majesty, and some captured native trophies.
Hostages!
A man, a woman, her baby.
Misnamed Kariko, Ignorth, Nutak.
Anna means woman, Nutarak means baby, but these are also names.
All soon died.
Alas, there followed considerable dispute, I admit, but I arranged for the stone to be assayed at £5 per ton. Everyone wanted to believe the story, of course they did, and on the promise of fantastic gold, I financed 15 ships and mining operations. The Queen placed a chain of gold around Frobisher's neck and named her newfound colony Meta Incognita, the Unknown Shore, 3rd of June, 1578. But then...
What? What happened then?
One ship was lost. 40 men drowned. The rest returned with holds of stones. They were smelted at a new plant in Powder Mill Lane and pronounced worthless. There was no gold. There was no merchant's passage to Cathay. It was all stories and lies. And I was ruined. I petition you now for relief and assistance from the Fleet Prison. I only believe what I can hold in my hand.
Then you shall not believe my story.
We shall hear it regardless. And you are?
Sir John Davis, navigator, explorer. We sailed the route of Mr. Frobisher in 1586. I commanded the Sunshine. We sought the passage. We had come near shore on an island, the men named Desolation, but I thought it beautiful. When we heard a lamentation like the war howl of wolves and strange men approached us across the waters, I called upon our gentlemen to play their instruments and to dance, alluring them with signs of courtesy. One of them pointed to the sun and struck his breast so hard, all present heard the blow. We offered them parts of our clothing and continued to play and to dance. The next morning, we awoke to a drum beating from the same island. This time, they danced for us. I found them void of craft or double dealing, and when we returned the following year, they remembered us. The light suffuses everything. This is the place of greatest dignity on earth.
Most people don't understand the Arctic and its people. I mean, the Arctic is better known for its wildlife than its people. And so humanizing the issues and making people aware that there are people who live in the Arctic who thrive, not just survive, but thrive on the cold, the ice and snow. This is our livelihood. This is our culture. This is our training ground. It is our life force. The ice is our life force in the Arctic.
Does anyone else have another story to tell of the wonder and the terror of the ice?
Me. I'm here.
You must request permission to speak.
He does not need permission. Not yours, certainly. Tell us.
I am the only boy on the Amity. Sailed from Blackwall in the spring to the Isles of Spitsbergen in 1616. We sailed the nowhere of the sea and dropped anchor in a bay of silence. Captain Poole sent me on a skiff across the glassy waters. I was ordered to set foot alone on the stony shore. The fog lifted, and I turned, and saw mountains in the sky. The sun stayed still and stared. I am there now, an old man, standing at the edge of the whole world in the silence in his head.
We did not have technology. We did not have satellites or ice reports. We did not have
We had next to nothing, but the maps in our heads.
Our curiosity and courage. This is what happened. The sea was grey glass. The sails stiffened in the deck and the rigging, and our clothing and faces feathered with frost, so we are stinky angels in a church of frozen light. But then a horizon of white ice drove us into a storm. The gallery fire was quenched and the lookouts peered into a timeless blizzard. And then, it changed. We chanced upon the calm waters we named Fairhaven. When we went ashore, uncountable barnacle geese observed us without fear, until our volleys of stones sent them crying into the blue. We carried 60 eggs warm in the nest of our hands back to the ship, and cracked, and ate them. We sailed south into a blue morning, found ourselves trapped between two iron chains of hills. And the wind died, and the mist thickened. Little orcs and geese in the rocky cliffs shrieked their revenge, for we were lost in the glooming, but so were they. For they flew into our dead sails and fell to the deck like an augury. We escaped with our lives and sailed east. But then the ice took us in its grip, and a great darkness came. But that is another story.
Enough about silence and darkness. Cheer up. Does anyone here remember us? Who did the ruddy work? Surprise, surprise. Save the poetry. Here's a different story, and none so pretty, of the nameless crews of Hull and Peterhead, Aberdeen and Dundee and Whitby and London. We are the men of Blubbertown. We also sailed the nowhere of the sea, ship after ship, year on year, to hunt whales and walruses in the desolation. They lay so thick we could walk their blue-black hills all across the bay. They watched us with their calm little eyes. One slept under our beakhead a long while. They did not suspect or fear us. Hauled up onto the stone beach, we flensed them with our knives. And it is like a Bible. Black cover, vellum pages slit open, the cracked spine running red with blood. The dead whale's lips are soft. Under the chin, the skin is white. On Sundays, we pray to return home to our families. And the marvellous lit pubs of Hull and Peterhead and Aberdeen and Dundee and Whitby and London. In the merciless and interminable light, we smoke our pipes to mask the unholy pong of boiling, stinking oil of our great good fortune. And we drink brandy and we shout, "Sod off!" to the silence. Always at our backs. We bought home 180 tons of oil from 17 bowhead whales. Amsterdam, San Sebastian also dispatched their fleets to the North Water. It was a war for industry.
A war for industry. Does that sound familiar?
Same as it ever was.
We made our money.
But what did we leave behind?
Empty bays.
Diminished seas.
Dominoes whittled from whalebone.
A lost spoon.
Silence.
I, Jonas Poole Wheeler, was then miserably murdered between the sailor town of Ratcliffe on the north shore of the Thames and the Towers of London.
And I left my unnamed bones in the shallow graveyard of Dead Man's Plain, in a narrow box of planks opened each winter by the curious frost.
In the name of Christ, we need some music. Play! Dance! Sing!
We are the kings of nowhere.
So we name our new world.
Captain Jan Reap of Rotterdam. I name this fjord, valley, glacier, river, Reap Jordan.
Bollocks.
Reap Dale.
I,
Reap
Thomas
Green,
Edge, and Reap whaler Helm. And merchant.
No.
Name this
Reap,
island,
the Basque
Edgeland.
Whalers of St. Jean de Luz. Name this headland, Biscayan Land.
Magnificent. Lovely. Me. You're all children. Does anyone here remember who named Dead Man's Plain? Where we left our dead in boxes because the ground was frozen shut.
Fairhaven.
Bell Point.
Bell Sound.
Horn Sound.
Ice Point.
Ice Sound.
Crossroad.
Half Moon Island.
Cape Cod.
Foul Sound.
Low Sound.
Cross Sound.
Blood Sound.
Stinking Sound.
Comfortless Cove.
Grim Mountain.
Misery Mountain.
Fog World.
Black Point. Lost Point.
Birdsong Rock. Where we disappeared.
Sing now and raise the dead.
Sing now and raise the dead, time for us to go. Sing now and raise the dead, time for us to go. Sing now and raise
ship after ship, year after year, century on century, falling like snow on the black waves of the sea. Brave men, heroes, whalers, desperados, seafarers, map makers, explorers, audacious liars.
For new markets, for fortune, for fame, for recognition.
For the pledges of our lovers, for the loss of our lovers. For wages, for work, for better, for worse.
Sing now and raise the dead, time for us to go. Sing.
We were shipwrecked, maddened, starved, blown away. We ate candles and birdskin.
We were drowned. We were lost in the white cloud and never found. We forgot our names. Our names were forgotten.
We brought back stories no one believed. We brought back dreams we could not understand.
We were not understood.
We found no words in the failure of home for our stammering hearts.
And a long, long time. And a long time ago.
Can anyone here tell the future?
We can.
Us.
Oh, Christ, I have a funny feeling this won't be good.
From the industry of the Leviathan come candles and oil lamps, corset stays and the ribs of sunshades, collar stiffeners and buggy whips, paper creasers and dominoes, and even the future itself. Light for the streets of cities and fuel to drive the textile mills and eyeglass frames. Chess pieces and piano keys. 2 centuries of this industry later, the creatures are almost gone, and the people who hunted them, gone. And the world that was made from them and the people who lived in it,
gone.
So it goes.
Why?
What you win, you lose.
We lose.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone.
We do.
But who could imagine the ice would die?
For us, it's not just about the ice and the polar bears. It's about our children. It's about our families and the communities that are trying to get back on their feet on solid ice, pun intended, because the ice is our life force. It is our food systems. It is our supermarket. Our animals thrive on that cold. It is about mobility and transportation. And it is about safety and security. And really, it is a human right issue. And it is our right to be Inuit as we know it, because we don't just survive, we thrive in that. And the Inuit holistic way of teaching our children for the realities of our hunting culture teaches not only the technical skills for becoming a proficient provider and a natural conservationist, but it teaches character and life skills such as patience and courage, boldness, persistence, focus, determination. And it builds resiliency. And ultimately what it does is builds sound judgment, and wisdom, silatunik, we call that.
And now the shipping forecast at 0048 GMT on the 1st of January 2028. Gale warnings. Hurricane force imminent. Present. Veering. Backing. Visibility. Poor. Fog.
General synopsis.
Going once. Going twice. Going.
Going. Saudi Aramco, Chevron, Gazprom, ExxonMobil, National Iranian Oil, BP, Royal Dutch Shell, Coal India, Pemex, Extreme Above Normal, Winter Air Temperature, Marine Heat Waves, Record Highs, Winter Ice Growth Low, Far Below Normal, Large Heat Transfers, Early melt onset. Summer ice retreat. Pip.
Now we shall hear from the gentlemen explorers of the 19th century, seeking to discover the North Pole and stand on the very top of the world.
Well, bravo, boys.
Be brief, sirs. Time is melting away. And we have others who need to speak?
About the dispossession of our lands.
About the destruction of our way of life.
About the need to remind you that we exist.
When will you listen to us, the guardians of this land?
I have a story.
Nice uniform.
Thank you, whoever you are.
I ask the questions. And who are you?
Edward Sabine, Chief Scientific Officer, member of the Royal Society.
And what year is it now?
We sailed for the North in 1819. My work was to study magnetism, including atmospheric electricity, the Aurora Borealis, and to locate the magnetic North. We sailed further west than any before us until we could find no way forward. But when we turned back, the sea ice locked us, fast, in Winter Harbor. When the Great Dark arrived, we all had our tasks. Cheerfulness was an order. I poured water from the mast to see if it would freeze before it hit the deck. It did. We perform plays on the quarter deck. We publish our own newspaper, the Winter Chronicle, which tells us about ourselves as we would wish to seem. In the evenings, the officers read by the light of the blubber oil lamps and listen to the music of my violin. We caught a white fox, named him Jack, and taught him to eat from our hands. Carlo, the white setter, has vanished, and this has upset us. More than we are allowed to say. It has been 3 months of endless night now. The thermometers have cracked, and so have some of us. Some have died of madness. Others have simply disappeared. Officers have been ostracized. The articles of war have been read out on the quarterdeck. I suppose this is not the story you wish to hear. We take our walks in death-like silence. Under the stars and the moon of midday. We sing out to each other a mile and more away across the ice. I am 31 years old. I dream of home, of Killiney Bay on a vast summer's day. I stare at a stone for hours to calm my terror. I hold it in my hand like the history of the world. Below the horizon, the sun is a dark red god. Am I a dream? Who will I be when I awake? If I awake.
And you, sir. Introduce yourself, sir, and your story.
I am William Scoresby of Yorkshire. Whaler, explorer, scientist, and clergyman. Although the commercial purpose of our voyages was the northern whale fishery and the practical application of the harpoon, I was interested in science, in snow and snow crystals, and in charting the coastline of Greenland.
You must start your story, sir. What precisely do you need to say?
Where to start? 'Twas the year of our Lord, 1822. I was considering the works of reflection and refraction when through my portable telescope I observed an extraordinary appearance. The mountains along the coast assumed the most fantastical forms of castles and lofty turrets, towers and battlements, and I beheld them, as it were, metamorphose into great arches and vast romantic bridges. And the air itself was perfectly transparent, lensed. The land and ships enlarged and elevated, looming above the horizon. The pure contrast of black rock and white snow drawing all together. I contemplated a fog bow's bands of dazzling colour. The lower part of the circle descended beneath my feet to the side of the ship, and although it would not be more than 100 feet from my eye, it was perfect. And I saw, in the centre of that circle, a shadow which I realised was mine. My head conspicuously portrayed.
Oh, dear God.
Mr. Scoresby, will you kindly, please, get to the point?
Yes. Apologies. The thing is, was, at that very moment, as I was contemplating the wonders of shadows and light, why could I not see my darling wife dying so far away? What loomed over the horizon's lens turned out to be an empty future, which could never again raise up a living image to my grieving eyes.
People often ask or wonder, why do we focus so much on our country food? Because country food is much more than just the nutritional value, even though that's really important. I often jokingly say that it's not going to be cup of soup that's going to keep you warm in minus 40. It's going to be country food that warms you from the inside out, and particularly seal meat. It's full of omega-3. It warms you in very cold weather, so it keeps you very healthy. It is very grounding to be eating together. The natural euphoria and the connection to family and to the hunter and to our ancestry. The spiritual value, women in silence, in meditation, cleaning skins, is just a powerful moment of being in the moment. Men waiting for seals almost in a yogic position for hours in a meditative state. They call it their peaceful place. And so for us, it's about a connection to source. We have been judged very harshly, you know, when people see blood on the white ice. blood on our hands or on the ice is about celebration of food and culture. And when we're cleaning our animals and our hands are in the blood, it's very much like those in the South who are gardening and their hands are in the soil. And so the connection is the same. The source is the same. And if people could understand that, there would be less judgment, I think, on us.
May I send a message, please?
Who's speaking?
Nils Strindberg, photographer. An explorer, I suppose. I remember we set off in 1897 to reach the North Pole. But my diary has stopped. Blank pages. Strange. May I read a letter to my love?
We're listening.
Dearest, you will have heard of our disappearance, as our lovely balloon of Chinese pongee silk stitched in a Parisian atelier. 95 feet high, rose into the summer blue. The drag ropes by which we hoped to steer twisted, tangled, and failed. Soon we sailed into freezing fog which encrusted the silk, weighing it down. It would be fair to say things were not quite going to plan. After 65 hours in the air, we landed on pack ice. We were well-dressed in our socks and fine Jaeger breeches. We drank champagne, dined on Chateaubriand steaks and our lightweight aluminium cutlery, and ate Belgian chocolates. Later, we lived on biscuits and honey. When that was gone, to survive, we cooked the tongues, kidneys and brains of polar bears. We've just toasted your birthday and, strangely, although all seems lost, we are happy. I took these last photographs contained in these rolls in this reflex camera in its black leather case and wrote this almanac for you, my love. Perhaps one day you will hold these lost negatives up to the light of a day I shall not live to see. I think, after all, your love made a better balloon, of finer silk, of my heart. So I release it now, filled with one last breath into the air.
But wait, that is not the end of the sad story.
It isn't?
Someone here wishes to speak to you.
Who? Oh, it cannot be.
My darling, it is your betrothed, Anna. When your letters were delivered 33 years late, I could not tell what I felt. After your disappearance, I waited. And waited. And I joined the coterie of waiting women, wives, and mothers, trapped in our performances of perpetual sorrow and constantly assessed for any clue of the fury hidden in our hearts. There were sightings of you in Russia, in America, in impossible places. None true. So, in the end, hope died, if never love. I married another man in America, but I could not forget you, ever. Now, your lost remains return to me. A diary, whose pages are frozen together, unreadable, a gathering of some bones, and these mysterious negatives, holding images of your reverse shades, the crashed black moon of the balloon, the bright days of your survival. The light shines through, but dearest, I do not find you anywhere. Is that it? What black album of memory do these deserve? Why did you go? What for? Why could you not stay at home with me in our future? Lost time snows in my heart, whose ashes are buried close to you now, in a silver box, forever.
For God's sake, what sentimental bull.
You must introduce yourself if you wish to speak.
Very well, Robert Edwin Peary, explorer. They called me the Iron Man with good reason. Willpower was what it took to cross hundreds of miles of broken, rearing ice to the pole. April 1909, and when there was a suspicious wooden feeling in my feet, they sliced off my sealskin boots, and various of my toes snapped off at the joint. Frozen. I laughed. But if I lost both feet, how would I be able to stand at the pole? In the end, it was 8 toes, and then I carried on.
Sorry, I got there first. Frederick Albert Cook, explorer, physician, ethnographer. The year before.
This is not what the Committee of the National Geographic Society nor the Naval Affairs Subcommittee of the House of Representatives decided when they awarded me the honor. Your claim was unproven.
But you were not the lone hero, surely. There are others here who were with you at the pole.
Who? Let them dare reveal themselves.
Says here in Wikipedia, 7 expedition members, 19 Inuit, entire families, 140 dogs, and 28 sledges.
What is this Wikipedia of which you speak?
It is a repository of knowledge. It's online.
Dear God, what nonsense! I measured the sun 13 times to prove my achievement of the pole.
Yet you forget me now. After all our journeys together. I wonder why.
And who were you?
Thank you for asking. People often don't. I am Matthew Hansen, born Charles County, Maryland, USA, 8th August, 1866. My family were sharecroppers. I am not, perhaps, your idea of an Arctic explorer. This is my story. We set out in the light of midnight, step by step, foot by foot. We made good progress across the ice to the pole's vicinity, which Mr. Peary measured with his sextant. When I congratulated him on the achievement, he held his face in his hands and said nothing to me. I was there. If you look me up in the indexes of your histories, I merit mention as black manservant or lifelong associate or not at all. My black face, invisible, in the snow of these white stories, that quarrel for the victory of the pole. I was useful, for I spoke the languages of the Eskimos. I built sledges, drove dog teams, and was popular, but still, I had to call him sir. I remember, I was the first man to stand with 360 degrees beneath my feet, and east, and west, and north. Meaningless. A black man out of Maryland, together with our companions, Utah, and Okea, Eginwa, and Siglu, posed for the photograph, holding flags at the top of the world. After I died, They put my black face beside his on a postage stamp worth 22 cents. And then they moved my bones to lie beside his, who came to hate me, in the Arlington National Cemetery.
They couldn't say our names. They called me Uta, and Udark, and Udark, and Udark, and Wuta. I am Utark. Long after I died, an island was named after me. At that time considered the northernmost land, a field of gravel, a tiny territory, less than 1 meter above sea level at its highest point. You can Google it.
Ladies, please, speak your names.
I am Alexina.
I am Akaitunga. We are the mothers of the two boys they left behind, Gala Piri
and Anuk Henson.
And we are their descendants, come to stand at the graves of Piri and Henson in Arlington Cemetery in 1987.
And we are their descendants. We keep in touch now on Facebook.
And we are the youth. When will you listen to us? Nothing about us without us. Hashtag
we exist.
I often walk people through the challenges that we have faced, you know, right from the 1920s, when we were made to become fur traders to meet the global markets for fur. And that was the beginning of the shift of a way of life, and that the spiritual practices that were destroyed, our cultural practices that were destroyed, and we started to change our diet from traditional food, adding more flour, sugar, lard. And in the 1940s, there was a real collapse of the fur market. We were just left to starve. The dog slaughters, 20,000 dogs were killed in the name of safety, but in reality it was to coerce us and get us out of the land and into the communities that they were building infrastructure for. That's when the substance and addiction started to set in. The profound woundings that we still see and experience today are from all of those historical traumas. To go back to the issues of how misunderstood the Arctic is to the rest of the world. And as I say, very often the wildlife in the ice are better known. So the messaging for me, the most important messaging is understand this historical context. It's really important.
Thank you very much, Sila. Now, if that is everything from the gentlemen explorers?
Not quite. I have something to add, if I may. Wally Herbert, explorer, died 2007 in Inverness. Listen. When I was 12, to win a bet, I walked across the thin ice of the frozen Severn and never looked back. Later, I resolved to walk from Alaska to Svalbard, across the sea ice via the pole of inaccessibility in the North Pole. My Inuit friends left a map pinned to the hut door, marked with the places they thought I would die. It was 3,800 miles, and the ice floes were not drifting in our favour. In the end, we reached 90 degrees north, 50 degrees below zero. We ate beef stew, and I telegraphed the Queen. It was April 6th, 1969. 3 months later, a man took the first step on the moon. By the time we got home, we were forgotten. You couldn't walk it now, even if you wanted to. Why not? Because the sea ice is melting. And no one can walk in water.
There's there used to be a time when everything froze in October, and we were on the ice by late October or early November. Today, things are very different. The ice is forming much later in the fall and breaking up much earlier in the spring. And even up in the high Arctic, when I first moved up there in 2000, the ice was formed and people were going out on it. But now people boat until November. So we just hope every year is different. Human trauma and planet trauma are one of the same. Sustainable ways causes irreparable damage to the atmosphere, and it's forcing the planet to react with violent storms and other erratic events. There was a time where it was 27 degrees on a Friday, and Monday it was snowing. So what we're seeing in our communities and in our atmosphere are not abnormal behaviors. Actually, what we're seeing are perfectly normal reactions to extremely abnormal circumstances.
And now the shipping forecast at 0048 GMT on the 1st of January, 2032. Coal-fired power plants, oil wells, factories, Arctic shipping lanes, pipelines, mines, smokestacks, tar sands, refineries.
General synopsis.
Still going.
Going.
Not gone. Not yet.
Tipping points.
Critical thresholds.
Positive feedback loops.
Ice sheet instability.
Surface albedo zero.
Rising ocean temperatures.
Thermal haline.
Circulation.
Failing.
Failing.
The ocean. Stilling.
Ceasing.
Pip.
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 Change is asitjinik or sukkanik. Pollution, like pops, for example, is sukkunaktuit. Pujurniluit is another word for pollution as well. Anger is umisunik. Youth is inusutuit. Inusutuk. Sivunivut is the future. It is true, is suliyuk.
Agribusiness. Adaptation. Anger.
Burning season. Brominated fire retardant. Beauty.
Bullshit.
Bios.
Clearances. Tibenzal contamination.
Fumes. DDT.
Curse. Desertification. Drought. Denial. Ignorance.
Gross.
Irreversible. Isotopes.
Justice.
Lies, lies, Jigs. Lies.
Knock,
lobbying.
Knock.
Land
logging.
Grabbing, opportunities,
plantations,
polychlorinated biofuels, power plants,
resources,
resilience, regeneration, Vex. Reforestation,
Vex. Vex. Exposure,
Wilding.
Yabber yatter zero.
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 Who are you? Identify yourselves.
And who are you?
I am in charge of the announcing and the telling.
Why?
You've risked nothing to speak.
Perhaps you have nothing to say for yourself?
I speak what is written. I speak the information.
Not any longer. The time for bystanders is over.
The time is now to tell the true stories.
The ones you maybe do not wish to hear of the future you have left us.
So be silent and listen.
Who goes first?
Me, Mercury.
Not the god.
The chemical element we call quicksilver. Living silver. And less poetically,
a persistent global toxic pollutant.
And in the 1980s, the toxins in our food chain, we realized persistent organic pollutants. We became the net recipients of these toxins. They ended up in high levels in the nursing milk of our mothers and in the blood cord. I was first elected. I entered into the arena of Inuit Circumpolar Council politics in 1995, where I headed the Canadian branch of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, representing our people at the international level. And it was just shortly after I was elected that the global negotiations started to happen, the intergovernmental negotiations, to address the issue of persistent organic pollutants, which are the byproduct of industry and pesticides coming from very far from the Arctic that were making its way through the weather patterns, where they would go up into the air and deposit. And when they got to the Arctic, it was too cold to go back up in the atmosphere. So they bioaccumulated and biomagnified in the Arctic sink where our marine mammals live. And where, of course, as Inuit, we are known to ingest marine mammals. As a mother and soon-to-be grandmother, it was a no-brainer for me to think that this was not just a chemical story, nor was it just an environmental issue, but one of human health. Imagine a world we had created when Inuit women, far from the source of these toxins, had to think twice about nursing their babies as a result of our food chain being poisoned from these persistent organic pollutants. Can you imagine a world we'd created where African women were using DDT, for example, to protect their babies from dying from malaria? What a world we created when women of the world had to carry the brunt of these chemicals. And we really needed to get the world to understand that this was a human plight and that this was a human health issue.
I was born in your dream of the future, released by furnace fire. I ascended the winding stairs of the smokestacks until I reached the orange sunrise and the blue sky. No one waved goodbye. No one saw me go. I was uncountable and invisible. One way or another, I was carried north in the hands of the winds, through the stories of the rivers, by the generosity of the oceans. And when I arrived at the cold top of the world, it felt like home, sweet home. And I waited in the long darkness until at last the first light of the year transmuted me out of thin air, and I came to rest in ice and snow and black water. Now I accumulate and magnify in the cells of fish, in the eggs of birds, inside the warm coats of seals and bears, and in the wombs of mothers. I concentrate so the faces of the future take on my features, and I sing my names into the ears of the unborn. PCB, POP, DDT, cesium, technetium, mercury.
Pollution, like POPs, for example, is sukunaktuit, pujorniluit is another word for pollution as well. Healing is mamisarnik, change is asitinik or sukkanik, and wisdom is silatunik.
And now we welcome the pteropods.
The water pods?
Tiny sea butterflies, or sea snails, you might say. We scientists say small marine gastropods, vital for the marine food chain, characterised by a pair of little wings.
Hush, for they are shy.
We are easily disturbed by the light of day. It sees through us, through the fine coils of our precise shells, to the next to nothing that we are, And so, to stay true to ourselves, we fold up our wings and sink deep into the dark, where we pass the time in ways you can't imagine. Far beneath the arches of the waves that hold up the high vaults of the sea and its whispering domes. After vespers, we rise again, through the shadows of the fathoms, drawn to the moon, and the great hunting grounds where we feed on the traces of stars. We allow the dream of the current to carry us where she will. There is no hurry, for we are drifters and wanderers. Staying is nowhere, and home is everywhere. But something is wrong somewhere. It is hard to say exactly what, except we taste among the salts and minerals a difference, like the tang of a coin of the wrong currency, or the sting of a wild spirit surprising our eyes, and the touch of too much heat that makes us drowsy. And we imagine ourselves fading, little by little, like ghosts. Overexposed and slowly dissolving in the gentle acid of this changing light.
And we are methane. Colorless, odorless, everywhere. Listen. We served the sentence of the ages in the penitentiary of the permafrost. Lately, we imagined we could hear the ice breathing out and out and out. But we never dreamed it was you who held the key to release us in the fires of coal, in the burning forests, and in the rich treasure troves of your waste mountains. And the hot breath of your billions did the work of ages and years. Of course we know we are a joke. Methane, ignoble, comical, livestock farts, wetland farts, manure from a billion bovines grazing on geometric farms that were rainforests a year ago. But now, we rise up from sinkholes and lakes, unrepentant, colorless, lighter than air, volatile with pleasure, and so much more powerful to warm the earth beyond our wildest dreams and conquer the future. You know us now.
Wait, is it wise to scare the audience?
This is year zero. People need to be scared.
It puts them off listening and caring.
People need a wake-up call. The end of the world.
That's just doomerism. That's the apocalypse business talking.
We're living like gods on borrowed time.
No, there are scenarios, not all disastrous.
We need optimism to make progress happen.
I don't fit in the optimistic box. Well, pessimism is its own black box.
Complacent idiocy while the world burns.
It's the story of change. All stories are about change.
Then let's change the story. This is not just a story or a fable. It is true.
It is true, is Suliyok. The breakdown of the Arctic ice and the glaciers and the melt of Greenland have created more chaos in the world in the last 10 years and more to come as a result of the inaction and the lack of imagination to really do what we need to do and create a new way of doing. And so it's more about values. Getting back to the values that are based on fairness, based on respect for our land, for the sea, the air, the environment, and the planet for each other. It's not to waste. It's go back to more of the basics. Less is more, in a sense. We could do that.
Hush! Here she comes.
Who is it?
The story of ice.
The core of an ancient glacier.
In her frozen dress of long lost time.
Perhaps she will speak to us.
Welcome to the Library of Ice. A high security auditorium of silence. Far below zero. I am a long story. 10,000 feet long. 1,000,000 years old. A chronicle of lost time. Back to the first dark. Too dark for telling. I am every winter's fall. I am the keeper of the air of every vanished summer. I distill lost atmospheres, pressed into ghosts, kept close to my cold, old heart. Here is the dust and music of your brief cities. Here is the ash and smoke. Here are your traffic jams and vapor trails. Here are your holidays in the sun and your masterpieces and your pop songs. So I know why you slice moon after moon from me, holding each fragile face up to your searchlights. Why you measure and record the tiny cracks and snaps of my melting mysteries. Because you know, you are the people who have changed nature. And now you are on your own.
My daughter is a throat singer, drum dancer, and she has been doing this for a long time now as well, since she was 17, 18 years old. She was accepted into the National Theatre School of Canada, and she went to one of our cultural institute offices here called Avatak, found a book with a picture of two men on the front cover, and they were all in caribou fur. And on the inside of it was the names, David Chisarotsiak, that was my great-grandfather, and the other picture next to him was my great-great-grandfather. It said, "Grandfather of Daisy Watt," which is my mother, "is David Chisarotsiak known to be a shaman?" Well, we have never, ever heard this, that our great-grandfather was a shaman. It was taboo. And my uncle, because he was in his 90s then, he's passed away since, my uncle smiled and said, "Yes, we had heard this. First time ever in the history of our family had anyone admitted that our great-grandfather was a shaman." I mean, I wept, others wept, and it was just a powerful, touching moment that finally a secret is out and that there's light brought into this. I get a little emotional. Light has been brought into our ancestry.
The sun is a bell, cast in light, tolling in the still waters, calling time to congregate for the memorial of ice.
The sun is a bell, cast in black water surrounding the deep,
declaiming the dark hours.
The sun is a bell cast in warning. Red light, red alert.
Ringing on
and on.
And on.
Culture is our medicine. And I truly believe that indigenous wisdom and knowledge is the medicine the world seeks in gaining back the sustainability and the values and principles that we need to get back to help save the future of our young people all over the world. Anger is umisunik. Youth is inusutuit. Dark is taktunik. Iminiaktuk is suicide. Cold and warming is qiyuyanak. People is Inuit. Death is Tohoyuk or Tohunuk.
I was lucky enough to sail around Svalbard for 3 weeks in a 19th century sailing boat to witness climate change. But we were mesmerized by the beauty, by the silence, by the light. It took some time even to start to understand.
And you are?
Nick Drake, poet. Hello, it's 2010.
What was it like?
That's a difficult question. I'll tell you a story. We sailed towards a glacier, the captain said. 40 years ago, the glacier started here. And then we sailed on through open water for half an hour to reach the glacier's face. That absence is what we're losing.
And the glacier, how was it? Tell us.
You might think of a high-rise megacity. Or a cathedral facade. Or perhaps a cold library of snow. We stood and stared face to face with the Farewell Glacier, waiting for the thunder to crack deep in its blue heart. To be honest, hoping for the satisfying, frightening finale of towers of ice falling. Which did not happen. But something else did. The sea drew in a different breath and held it. Then a single wave ran all along the shoreline, registering something. And when we sailed away across the inches of the sea chart, I wonder what we thought we'd seen through the cruel eyes of our cameras, framing, clicking, and failing to capture the beauty of the beast. And why a beast? Later, when we return to our warm living rooms where it feels we live like gods in borrowed time, how will we recall this frozen auditorium? And its oracular silence. And the last long performance of its disappearing act.
I have seen ancient traditions give way to southern habits. I have seen communities broken apart or transformed dramatically by government policies. I have seen Inuit traditional wisdom supplanted by southern programs and institutions, and most shockingly, like all of my fellow Inuit, I have seen what seemed permanent begin to melt away.
Polar ice, coral reefs,
ancient woodland, glaciers, rainforests, clouds,
wildwood, taiga, dawn chorus, Arcadia,
habitats, sanctuary. It's too late.
It's not too late.
It's midnight. Put out the lights.
Put out the lights.
Put out the lights.
Hush. Quiet. Listen. Long wave. Long wave.
Wave farewell.
Is anyone receiving us?
Over. Over. The dark. Water.
I appear on the horizon of your mind's eye. I arrive on the back of the north wind that blows on your neck and picks the pocket of your heart. With a brush of a crow's wing, I silence the birds in their trees of light. I pour myself down your chimneys, slip through the cracks between wall and floor and ceiling, draw down the blinds, kiss the remote and the TV with its one little red eye dies. I cover the full moon with a black coin, not even disturbing the snow falling on the dark wood in your sleeping head. I whisper, I am here, to the wires in the walls and the fragile flowers of the lights blow. And now I come to gather around the candle of your heart and its tiny courage. I see your face turn to its shining, and how you fear to look behind. For you know who I am, and you know I am here, waiting, waiting for you to turn and look at me and speak my name and walk into the dark.
So they rise again.
Chant the oceans back to their deep pulse.
Recall the broken rivers so they heal.
Re-enchant the ice and winter cold.
Sing now and raise the day.
Sing now and raise the day. Time for us to go. For us to
sing now and raise the day.
We can no longer think our way through these issues. We need to feel our way through them. When people say, well, now that I know what's happening, what can I do to help? I say, well, don't be on a mission to save us, because that's the root cause of the problems we face as Indigenous peoples. But look deeply as to how you're doing things, if that is impacting on not just our environment, but with Indigenous people. What can you do to change what you do? And once you start to change your attitudes, you can change your family system and their approaches, your community. Imagine we can treat Indigenous peoples and issues differently and tap into the incredible wisdom of Indigenous peoples of the world, whose lives and livelihoods have been most impacted by climatic changes and environmental degradation. We can come from those places of strength, you know, and not be forceful, or we can be outraged by something but not be raging. The world I was born into has changed forever. In a sense, Inuit of my generation have lived in both the Ice Age and the Space Age. The modern world arrived slowly in some places in the world and quickly in others, but in the Arctic it appeared in a single generation. It has been my intention to compel citizens to act and bring about change. I have hope in people. I have hope in the process. I have hope in spirituality that we will change and shift the way in which we treat one another and the way in which we treat our planet and our environment and our children and Indigenous peoples. I have hope in that. The world needs to realize that our environments, our communities all around the world are not separate, and that our shared atmosphere and oceans, our human spirit, connects us all.
Dear mortals, wake up. I know. You're busy with your colorful lives. You grow quickly bored and detest moralizing. I have no wish to waste the little time that remains on arguments and heated debates. I wish I could entertain you with some magnificent propositions and glorious jokes, but the best I can do is this. I haven't happened yet, but I will.
I am the future, but before I appear, please close the scrolls of information. Let the laptop sleep. Sit still and shut your eyes. Listen.
I can't pretend it's going to be business as usual. Things are going to change. I'm going to be unrecognizable. Please. Don't open your eyes. Not yet.
I'm not trying to frighten you. All I ask is that you think of me not as a wish or a nightmare, but as a story you have to tell yourselves. Not with an ending in which everyone lives happily ever after or a disaster movie, but maybe starting with the line, to be continued. And see what happens next.
Remember this. I am not written in stone, but in time. So please, don't shrug and say, what can we do? It's too late, etc., etc., etc.
Already I hear the sound of empty seats clapping as you head for the exit. I feel like the comedian who died. Dear mortals, you are such strange creatures, with your greed and your kindness, your hearts like broken toys. You carry fear with you everywhere, like a tiny god in its box of shadows.
You love shopping and music and good food and festivals. You lie to yourselves. Because you are afraid of the dark.
But the truth is this. You are in my hands, and I'm in yours. We are in this together, face to face and eye to eye. We are made for each other. Now, those of you who are still here, open your eyes and tell me what you see.
People ask me, how do you stay positive in all of this? And how do you feel hopeful? I think if I lost hope, I wouldn't be doing what I do, and I wouldn't be effective in the messaging that I give. Sivunivut is the future, and it is true, is Suliyok. That's it.
Farewell Glacier was performed by Adjua Ando, Jude Coward-Nickel, Kevin Harvey, Paisley James, Peter Mullen, Mila Patel, and Chloe Ragrag. The interviewee was Sheila Watt-Cloutier. Inuit throat singing was performed by Sylvia Cloutier, and Akinisi Sivoarabik. Original music was written and performed by Emma Jean and Isabel Pendlebury. The producer was Polly Thomas and was written by Nick Trigg. The Farewell Glacier was a Naked production in collaboration with Adele Ray for BBC Radio 3.
Night Tracks, the perfect soundscape for late night listening.
With routines back in full swing, make time to relax this winter on BBC Radio 3.
Join us for a mix of warming melodies and calming compositions, carefully curated to help you unwind.
So sit back, find a comfortable spot and escape with Night Tracks, Monday to Thursday nights from 11. Listen on Radio 3 and whenever you like on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 3, it's 9 o'clock and time now to hear more of the new releases featured in yesterday's Record Review. Here's Hannah French.
Good evening and welcome to Record Review Extra. Cue trumpets.